Hi, and welcome to the first episode of Conversations on Health and How We Get There. I'm Stephanie Shelton, and you may know me from my years in radio and TV news, CBS News, CNBC Audio, and a whole lot of Metro New York City TV outlets. I also ran a lot of marathons, and I discovered during that period that I really, really care about good health, like I suppose you do, too. And I also discovered that when I don't have good health, I really want to get it back. And so when COVID first hit us, I, like a lot of you, looked around and said, how is it possible that the United States is so woefully unprepared for a public health disaster like we had? And then I discovered as the years went on that we're completely unprepared for the next public health disaster. So that's kind of what this podcast series is going to be about. And I think it's necessary that we find out how to fix things. Maybe you and I can solve it. At any rate, we're certainly going to try, and you'll hear more about this in future podcasts. I'm a great believer in connections, and we get most of our information these days in these little tiny sound bites. So we need to really figure out why something is happening, and then connect that why to the next why, and the next why, and the next, and pretty soon you'll have a pretty good picture of it all. So I'm going to try to make some of those connections for you in this podcast series. I'm going to start with a typical European, mostly public healthcare system, so you can compare it to your own experience right here in the United States in our very fragmented private system. I spend a lot of time in Europe and specifically in the Czech Republic, which is a small landlocked country with only a few million more people than the state of New Jersey. My husband and I have a lot of friends there, and we've envied how easily they seem to get the health care they need. No one ever seems to worry like we do about running up huge medical bills for a major illness. Like all the European and Scandinavian countries in the United Kingdom, working Czechs and their employers pay a lot in taxes and insurance fees to support most of the overall healthcare system. It isn't pure play socialized medicine like you so often hear about Europe, but the government does pay for the old, the very young, and those without jobs, and everyone has similar coverage. It's a far cry from the hodgepodge of health coverage in the U.S., assuming you even have health coverage. So a few weeks ago, I sat down with an internationally known expert on public health, Dr. David Marks. It was in his office in Prague, where he heads the Department of Public Health of the Third Faculty of Medicine, which is part of the renowned Charles University Medical Program. Charles University, by the way, was founded in 1348. Dr. Marks also heads the Czech National Hospital Accreditation Program. I asked Dr. Marks to explain how the Czech healthcare system works and how it's currently paid for. Now, of course, he's explaining in Czech crowns, and currently there are about 22 to 24 crowns to a U.S. dollar. Here's Dr. Marks.
The organizational structure is actually similar to any other healthcare systems in the world. It comprises of primary care, then ambulatory specialized care, and hospitals as a tertiary level, including long-term care facilities. That's the structure. The financial side of the system is based on the Bismarck Health Insurance.
A bit of history here. That Bismarck health insurance concept dates back to 1883, when Prussian Chancellor Otto von Bismarck created what is still known as the Bismarck model. It was adopted by Austria-Hungary, which ruled the Czechs until World War I, and surprisingly, it's also the basis of the U.S. system. Back now to Dr. Marks.
So it is mandatory public health insurance, with no opt-out possibility. So every citizen by law is insured, and every citizen has to pay insurance fee, except for those groups of citizens who are insured by the state, which in general The largest groups are pensioners, then children, and people taking care of small children. Then there are smaller groups that are negligible. The insurance fee is 13.5% of income, of gross income, and there is 100% redistribution. There are 9 insurance offices. All of them have the same legal status, so a person can choose whichever insurance office or insurance fund, if you wish, they will choose.
I asked Dr. Marks about the so-called orphan drugs, which the drug companies develop for rare illnesses that have few, if any, alternatives. Dr. Marks says in the Czech system, they're covered.
It's even easier now because the law has changed. Before that, the patients had to apply to the insurance fund to have it approved. And now, even for the rare diseases, because that's a big topic nowadays, they get it covered. So the system is really, which is fine, the system is very generous. The problem is that the system is generous even with the pennies. So, for instance, medications that cost just painkillers or some other antibiotics that cost very little are fully covered. That's where the money flows away. Mm. Because the principle would be to cover catastrophic care. So that means care that costs so much that an average individual could get bankrupt by covering it. That's, for instance, for Gaucher's disease or for some other rare diseases. But yes, they get the coverage. If it's evidence-based, the system is not paying for research medications.
Okay, let's talk a little about the way this is financed. You talked about the tax for the insurance or the percentage that a person has to pay for insurance, which is depending upon their income, essentially, right?
Yeah, it's 13.5% of their income.
There are very high taxes in this country that pay for all kinds of things that we don't tax directly. Mm-hmm. So how is the bulk of the healthcare system paid for?
Well, most of it is paid out of health insurance. The yearly costs are out of health insurance are now 400 billion Czech crowns, and the prediction is it will be 460 billion for this year. And out of general taxation, it's only investments, and, buildings, for instance, in hospitals, and then some, we call it care in public interest, such as forensic medicine, for instance, or part of occupational health, because otherwise occupational health is paid by the employers.
In 2015, the World Health Organization sponsored a published study on the Czech health system. I asked Dr. Marks about its conclusion that the Czech Republic spent relatively low amounts of government money on health relative to the rest of Europe. And remember, he's talking in terms of Czech crowns, that's $1 being currently worth about 22 to 24 crowns.
So this is because the percentage of GDP that is allocated to healthcare is now around 8.4% of GDP, which is a little bit below the OECD average. But in the real money, not as a percentage, the amounts are extremely high. And these 480 billion Czech crowns are public money because it's the insurance is public. There is no way how to get out of it. So you can always pay more, and naturally, especially the politically left side of the country would be pleading for more money into the system. But in general, the system is, in my opinion, the system is overfinanced because we have too many healthcare institutions, especially hospital beds that spend a lot of money. And a lot of the funds go into Wayne. So increasing the amount, what is happening now, fortunately, partly because of the economic pressure, is restricting the money, the public money getting into the system. And if we are speaking about public money, in a narrowed expression of the word, that's the payments for, we call them state insurees. Mm-hmm. The state pays insurance fees for children and for pensioners. And that's probably what this reflection is focused on, because it's a lump sum. It's around 1900 crowns per person, but that's how the system is, and it's the only actually when some of these trade unions or the doctors union push into increasing money into the system, because that's the only part that can be modified, because that only depends on decision of the it's a government regulation, it's not a law. Mm-hmm. Because our citizens have a very high burden of taxation. It's together with social insurance, it's around 32%, so it's extremely high. It's politically impossible to raise it. But still, I would consider the system not underfinanced, but overfinanced, or even better to say, the structure is too megmanious, so it spends too much money.
The way this was discussed is they looked back on the period where they tried to impose co-payments on people, some small payment to go to the doctor because they said Czechs overuse their doctors, and some small co-payment for hospital stays. Mm. And all of that has been dropped because people refused.
That was a political decision. That was a very short-sighted political decision. People did not refuse. The sums are very low then, and the only one that has been left is paying for emergency care, and for emergency care they pay 90 crowns, which is €3 actually, or €4, so it's negligible. There's been, and unfortunately this has been a big topic of a socialist party that has used this and won, so then they dismissed the co-payments, which is a big toxic factor in the Czech system, because it leads to extreme overuse of the system, and in the final result it decreases quality, and it's extremely asocial, because it actually blocks the poor from healthcare consumption, because the rich people, they don't go to the same kind of healthcare institution or to the same kind of doctors, but as they don't have any legal way how to co-pay, so they pay outside taxation, and it's a gray zone. But still, being in the public system, they block access to the, I mean, not structural access, but access in time to the poorer ones. And unfortunately, especially in larger cities, emergency rooms are overcrowded by unnecessary care provision. And that's because there is no effective co-payment.
Okay, how you call it a public system. Our system, of course, is private in the U.S. We have a separate public health system, mm-hmm. except we don't, but in name only we have a public health system, which is supposed to deal with things like pandemics. Mm. And in the beginning was simply not there when COVID hit. How does your system, which you call public, feed into that kind of public health need when you have an invasive illness of some kind that we would consider part of the public health system?
Well, historically, this system has copied the Soviet one, where hygiene and public health was very much supported. So as we got rid of the communists, so we wanted to get rid of all the institutions that were tied to them, and public health in the expression like hygienic service has been slimmed down. I think that dealing with pandemics was a new issue for all countries in the world. And now from the publications about the effectivity of German interventions, their famous Institute of Robert Koch, and comparison to Sweden, where there was actually no limitations, show that actually all these heroic activities with face masks and lockdowns were not really as effective. But that's not to say that the countries were stupid. We didn't know what to do. It was a new issue. Our public health system is was just slimmed down, but it was not converted into the modern Western system that does not so much check on small shops and bakeries whether they are cleaning their hands. That's somebody else's job, but looks at pandemic planning and more maybe what we call now flexible infrastructure, so that the hospitals are able to turn very quickly into isolations. That's a big debt here, and also no one wants to work in the public health system because it's like healthcare professionals don't want to work there, physicians and nurses, because it's a part of the public service, like national. It's, you are paid like a public servant, which means that your income is extremely low. Mm. So there is no motivation. I'm a teacher, I'm a vice dean at the university, and out of all, we have around 300 graduate medical doctors every year. And if one of them wants to work in public health system in every 3 years, that's a lot. No one wants to do that because it's not exciting and also it's badly paid. We were expecting that after the pandemics that would go up, but it didn't. They don't want to be officers in public health. So this requires a reform. We'll have to sort of copy maybe the British system and take out, get to the conclusion that no physician wants to work in, or no average physician wants to work there, and start educating new professionals in public health that not necessarily will be physicians or nurses, but they will have their own trajectory in training.
I'm trying to think back to the people I know who've been patients mm-hmm. in the hospitals I've seen as a result. I saw, this is over, I would say, the last 10 years, mm-hmm. hospitals that look like they came out of the Civil War, in our Civil War, and hospitals that looked completely modern, mm-hmm. with sections that looked like they had very modern equipment, mm-hmm. and sections which looked, mm-hmm. again, like the 1950s. How much modernization under the structure that you have, mm-hmm. have you been able to do? And if you compare, say, the Czech Republic to the UK or Germany or mm-hmm. even the US, where do you fit?
Well, we can't compare to the US because based on the private system in the US, the changes in the infrastructure are much more frequent. I think the estimate is that every US hospital refurbishes every 6 years. But the big problem here is that over the 30 years, we were unable to force through some reform of the structure of healthcare system. So there's too many, especially hospitals. And if there's too many hospitals, especially from the smaller ones, people start to go away to the larger ones because the smaller ones cannot provide appropriate healthcare. That's logical. We are like punished for progressivity of our predecessors, because in this part of Austrian-Hungarian monarchy, people were very sort of like welfare focused, building schools and building hospitals. But in the 19th or at the beginning of the 20th century, building a small village hospital was enough. Now you don't need them. So in general, the process of modernization is somewhat diluted. And that's why you will find a big difference even in Prague. Inside university hospitals, there will be new pavilions, new buildings, and also renewed ones, because the hospitals are structurally old. That doesn't mean anything that the hospital was built in 1762. It can still have modern inside. And then you'll find terrible places that look like from the 70s. Unfortunately, this is a result of unwillingness to cut down the number of beds to such a number where we could focus the money on. I don't think the issue is so big with equipment. If I compare, for instance, to British, Austrian, Israeli, or whatever developed countries, the equipment is modern, they can buy it, but it's the buildings, it's the infrastructure, it's the large rooms, and naturally it's the staffing, because if you have too many, you will still have, I know, because that's why one part of my professional interest is quality and patient safety. So I know that one third of the hospitals in the Czech Republic, I would never ever allow any of my family members to enter it, even as an emergency. So that's the big problem. And so, if you look at the numbers, for instance, cardiovascular diseases, we have comparable numbers to the US or the worldwide, like survivor after acute myocardial infarction or after stroke. But if you look at the outcome equity, meaning that wherever you are, the outcome has to be, that there's a big discrepancy. And also we have a problem in those areas of medicine that are not so sexy as cardiology and oncology. For instance, psychiatry, our psychiatric institutions are old. Some of them look like a horror city. And in some subspecialties in psychiatry, such as, for instance, pediatric psychiatry, there is even so extreme waiting time that it doesn't make sense. So, for instance, people wait for 8, 9, 10 months to get to a pediatric psychiatric clinic. And all this, unfortunately, is a result of unwillingness to tell the people. It's not the 19th century, and you can't have a hospital in every district town. If you want a hospital in every district town, then you have to accept that people will be dying, because the hospital is not complex, and it cannot be complex. You can't have a tiny hospital with MRI and order consultation services. So yes, we do have the top of the system is comparable to the top of the systems around, at least around Europe, but we are not, or the system is not acting like a public one with the responsibility to the citizens, that even if you look, if you live somewhere in a big periphery and by the borders, you have the same access to quality healthcare as someone living in Prague or Brno.
Well, that is certainly true for the United States. Our rural areas are not served at all. There will be hundreds of miles sometimes between an actual hospital and a rural area. So we started doing some telemedicine way before COVID because of that. And you don't get doctors who are willing to serve in those areas. So we have the nurse practitioner or some level of a nurse that can earn to below doctor, but...
Yeah, but you cannot compare a large country, a continent, where you can really argue by large geographic distances to such a tiny country like this. Here we don't have these geographical distances. It's not like people don't want to go to like 200 kilometers out of Prague because it's too far. They are lazy. But also they don't want to work in a low-quality hospital, because these small hospitals are usually managed by very old departmental heads that are overpaid just that they are there, because the hospitals are losing their accreditation for specialization training, so the juniors don't go there because it's no use for them. And that is all tied to the fact that we were, and at the same time, we are missing long-term care beds, so it wouldn't be like turning these beds into casinos or brothels. It would be turning them into long-term care institutions, which we are lacking. And that's very short-sighted, because the population here, as in all developed countries, is aging very quickly.
For a while there, I know you talked about medical personnel not wanting to go into the public health service, but doctors and nurses associated with the major hospitals, like here in Prague, could still get better money and better conditions in other countries, and a lot of them were leaving. Is that still going on?
I think it's good for, and I always tell it to our students, that they should not be patriotic. They should spend some time abroad. That enriches the system in global. Medicine is global, so I don't really care if a perfect graduate of our medical school opens a practice in Munich, Köln, or Paris. That's why European Union has been established, so they can freely move. But back to your question, we had years where about 10% of our graduates in medical schools, not in nursing schools, because nurses usually are not able to speak languages, so for them it's harder. But around 10% have been leaving. However, more than half of them have been returning on the average after 6 or 7 years, because that was typically the age, the time when their children should be starting going to school. And although I tell them not to be patriotic, they usually are, and they want their children to start their education here. But the salaries have increased very much over the last 5 or 6 years. So now the numbers of those leaving is not so high. They are not leaving because of money. Now they are more leaving because they are looking for better system of professional training, because the Czech system of medical professional training is also very fragmentized and unsafe for the junior physicians. The level of supervision from the privileged physicians is low.
Dr. Marx pointed out that there's now a lot more litigation by patients, which he said is now international, not just a runaway problem for U.S. health providers. And then I went back to COVID and the lessons learned as the virus keeps mutating and perhaps something even worse comes along.
Well, I'm an optimist, so I think this is something that happens once every 100 years, so we will now be over it. Lessons learned are on the microstructure are about improving our analysis of specific vulnerability to specific hazards, and changing the system so that it's more resistant and resilient towards these hazards. The lessons were learned on the level of individual institutions, but also the regions. I don't think there is a lot more, maybe for some of the institutions to cross-train medical staff to be able to rotate them between units. For the state, for the country, the lessons learned have been mainly about information and information management, because at the beginning there was actually no way how to know the numbers of beds open and so on and so forth. And maybe there are some lessons learned in patient education, because we were failing in educating people both about the pandemic and prevention, and then about vaccination. That's, for instance, when in comparison to Denmark, that has much better way of educating patients and citizens. So they are around 90% vaccination rate, and we are still somewhere around 60. So that was it. Naturally, now when you are building a new hospital, you will be building it as a flexible institution that can be turned into an isolation area as well.
You talked a little bit about information within the system, but what about the messaging from the system through the political system to the public. For example, the United States has had terrible messaging and has changed it continually. So people who don't know that science changes just simply thought they've been lied to and then stopped listening.
Well, that's what I was speaking about when I was speaking about education of patients and the public. That's exactly what I had in mind, because there was actually no real systematic approach, let's say, every day before, as Germans had it or the Dutch had it every day. The Minister of Health was speaking to them before the late night news, which wouldn't be such a big tragedy if it hadn't been for internet, because there is a lot of these fake news and so on. But unfortunately, that's you can fight it only to a certain extent. And yes, we will have to, all of us, I mean, that's a European issue, we'll have to learn how to approach the public better.
Okay, so finally, we've been talking about mostly now in terms of the healthcare system. Mm-hmm. This is a problem for every country. Medical costs are going up exponentially. They will continue to increase because all of the new procedures and drugs that are coming out that are, you know, a wonderful thing, but they're incredibly expensive. Mm-hmm. So how does a small country like the Czech Republic deal with that?
Well, at present, like a boiled frog, they don't deal with it at all. I think for the only path for the future is rationing of healthcare, increasing the amount of co-payments, of private payments, so that we cut the bottom of the pyramid away and we can focus on catastrophic care. Also, changing the structure, like focusing on high-level healthcare centers that are packed with technology and highly qualified staff, and then have the long-term care and rehabilitation to sort of allow for patient flow. Probably as a part of the cuts in the bottom of the pyramid, we can speak about telemedicine as well, although telemedicine does not have such a lot of opportunities here because the country is really small. So it's not like Australia. And without increasing private money in the system, like burdening patients with co-payments, we will get to bankruptcy, because the other solution is just to increase the insurance fees, which is politically completely unacceptable and would be very unfair. As I said, 32%, that's quite a lot of money. Or stealing money from the national budget. But we have to have in mind that there are other industries that need money: education, military, I don't know, social care and social welfare. And all in all, healthcare is used effectively, really needed only by about 15% of the population. 85% of the population don't need healthcare at all, or they need it only in a limited way. This is the only way to go. The big problem is that the politicians here have been very reluctant to speak to the public and tell them you have to pay a little bit more. Because people think that they are paying in their health insurance, but the pool of healthcare covered by the insurance is extremely vast, and you can find every year. I go to one of the South Bohemian cities, so the spa city, for some rehabilitation, as I pay for it myself, totally. But every year I find there are people, and sometimes the same people, who just sneak in and have their GP signed for them, and then the insurance fund pays. And that's around 10 billion crowns per year. Yeah. And there are other types of care that could be cut off immediately. So in my opinion, this is the only way forward. No other. Because people will not like sit down and say, oh, maybe I shouldn't have gone to the doctor today because it's not sensible and I'm wasting money from the budget. No, they have to go there and have to pay some significant sum, not 3 euros, but for instance, 50 euros. And then, only then, they'll start thinking about, was it really necessary or could I stay in bed and drink hot tea?
Interesting about that lesson about information management, something the U.S. system's also struggling with. And also interesting that public health systems like the Czech Republic's are struggling to find ways to keep the full coverage that people depend on and still pay for all the very expensive procedures and drugs that are beginning to define all healthcare systems, both to be explored in future episodes of Conversations in Health. Now, I want to thank Dr. David Marks for giving my producer and myself so much of his very heavily scheduled time. Again, Dr. Marks heads the Department of Public Health of the Third Faculty of Medicine, part of the renowned Charles University Medical Program, and he's one of the top experts on public health in Europe. Now, as you can see, there are major differences between the Czech health system and the way health coverage is experienced here in the U.S. or not. For some in the U.S., not experienced until they end up uninsured in an overcrowded public hospital. More about why this happens and how we might combine parts of the European health system with ours as this podcast progresses. The Czech system you just heard about is quite representative of the blend of private public health care in Europe, the U.K., and Scandinavia. Each country having a somewhat different mix. But what they all have in common is virtually every citizen has health care, and all working people have to pay into it. I think you'll really want to check out the next podcast in this healthcare series.
I have been paying, or my employer has been paying, or both of us were paying, into the Czech health system for all of the years up until...
This is Steve Fisher, an American writer who's lived and worked in the Czech Republic for 30 years or so. Steve never expected to need the kind of medical care that he received after a freakish infection almost killed him. What happened and why does he believe in the Czech health system so fervently? We'll check back here in 3 weeks, okay? Conversations on Health, How We Get There is produced and edited by Frank Harold. Research assistance from Dr. Richard Saltman, Professor Emeritus of Health Policy and Management, Rollins School of Public Health at Emory University in Atlanta. I'm Stephanie Shelton. I really hope you'll subscribe to my podcast. And until I see you again, take care of yourself and all those you love.